My guest on today's show, Talking to Cool People, with me, of course, Jason Brazell, is Chris Levy. Chris is a veteran winepreneur, which I'm very interested in learning more about, wine lover and world traveler. Chris specializes in helping wine brands build communities and relationships with their consumers. Chris practices what he preaches with his own wine club, where he helps local wineries tell the story behind the wine during his monthly wine club member call. Welcome, Chris. How are you?
Hey, Jason. Thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited. Obviously, we've known each other for a little while now, so
yeah.
It's been really great to watch your brand grow and see all the cool things that you've been up to.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Flattery will get you everywhere on my show, so just keep it up, please. So, Chris, we've got a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk about wine as one of the topics, and I know that my audience is going to like wine. I like wine. And you love wine. So I know we're going to spend some time on wine, what to drink, what it means, but we're also going to spend some time on the business of wine. And I'm really love that you're on because I've never had a guest on who's an expert in the wine, not only in the, I think I've had some guests on that are probably experts in drinking wine, maybe not so much in all the things that where the glass of wine ends up on our table. So with that, you ready to kick off?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So this first question will be pretty applicable. And I'm really curious how you're going to answer it. It's like, what's something that you nerd out about, Chris?
Besides wine?
Yeah, let's do, something besides wine. We're going to talk a lot about wine. So yeah.
No, I definitely nerd out about wine. But beyond that, I actually have really gotten into gaming. Specifically wargaming. It's a kind of a subset of gaming. You know, you've got board games and everything.
Yeah.
I love strategy games. I like, you know, moving stuff around on a table and seeing how like different things, you know, affect each other and seeing how different strategies play out over time. It's definitely one of the things I enjoy doing is letting my mind, you know, kind of play around with different, you know, possible outcomes and options and trying to arrange everything in a way that hopefully is going to benefit me.
Yeah. But it's funny when you said gaming, cause I'm like, oh, you're a video gamer. Cause I'm a huge video gamer.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you're more so like, what would be an example of something that you and I would play? Is it something we could play together?
Yeah. So, the main game that I usually play, that I've got a few friends that also play, is called Warhammer 40,000. It's set in the future. You know, the thing I like about it is just the complexity. There's a lot of different things that are going on and it's kind of a lot of what you make of it. You know, do you like this army versus that army? Do you like this unit versus that unit? You know, how do you employ them? It's very customizable and, you know, you never have the same, it's not like a board game where, you know, it's the only difference is what you roll on the dice.
Right.
I mean, you know, every game is completely different based off of the two players, based off of their army list and how you have the table set up and everything. And, you know, at the end of the day, a game like that, you know, you're trying to model real life, right?
Yeah.
Or not real life, but trying to model combat, if you will. But, it, you know, there's a lot of games that I don't really get close to. And I think it does a good job of capturing kind of some of the dilemmas that you could expect to face in some type of situation.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get more into your penchants for like wargaming and stuff too, I think a little bit later. That doesn't come out of nowhere, but just my wife and I were big Settlers of Catan players, which is a war game.
You're a
Catan player as well.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your go-to strategy or are you adaptable per the board or do you have a go-to strategy?
Yeah. I usually somehow end up with the biggest army.
I'm sensing a pattern here.
Yeah. usually end up with a pretty long road too. You know, a lot of times I don't get the first roll or the first pick. And so I will find kind of these marginalized areas that, you know, have moderate returns. Like, you know, maybe they've got, you know, threes and, you know, twos, threes, fours or whatever next to each other. And so I can kind of, you know, pick these places that hopefully in the long term, I can kind of start to string together. Whereas everyone else is like, all right, I'm going to go straight for the big payouts. Whereas I'm trying to look for more of an equitable distribution of resources. So that way I can have a balanced strategy.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, I didn't know you were a Catan player. We'll have to get together and play sometime when I'm in
We will.
Your neck of the woods, or you're in my neck of the woods. Yeah, my wife and I were big Catan players.
Yeah.
I was beat by my mother-in-law recently, which really chaps my hide. Cause she does she's a cards player. Okay. She likes to go after the cards, and she just gets very lucky. And if she's listening, I'm not bitter. I'm not competitive at all. I just not bitter. Yeah. I just, you know, just happy.
Yeah.
Nice, man. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about your comfort zone. The way to define your comfort zone is it's just what it is. It's the thing that's easy for you. It's the thing that's comfortable. It's the thing that I could go, hey man, could you go do this? Or you want to do that? And you'd be like, yeah, piece of cake. So Chris, what's something that is inside of your comfort zone that might be outside of somebody else's?
I love walking into a room where I know absolutely nobody. That is 100% my comfort zone. I'm an extrovert at heart. I have introverted tendencies, and we can talk about that more if you want, kind of how those two play off of each other for me. But to me, I love the variety. I love just meeting all kinds of different people. I like to say I've got 15 best friends. You start to kind of collect people as friends or colleagues or acquaintances or whatever. And it's really, you know, I was actually talking to my girlfriend this week, and we were talking about Christmas cards and everything. I was like, you know, I've never done Christmas cards before because I've, you know, been pretty much single for a long time. And I'm getting ready to move into a new place and thinking about getting a dog. And I was like, well, you know, maybe we should do Christmas cards this year. I was like, yeah, I'd probably have to send out like 500 Christmas cards or whatever, but
good problem to have.
I know I've been very blessed and feel very rich in friends and connections. And I think that stems from, you know, seeking out situations where you're thrust into these uncomfortable situations of, you know, whether it's socially awkward situations or just not knowing anybody in the room and just, you know, starting to strike out on your own and find ways to start building rapport with each other. That to me is my comfort zone.
Yeah. This will not come as a surprise to my audience or you, because I've talked a little bit about this. I'm the exact same way, which I think makes us a bit unique. Yeah. Even people that I know that are love networking, that are really friendly, they don't like the idea of nobody in the room. They want like the one or two anchor points. And so I will actually have people ask me sometimes, I don't know if people ask you, they'll be like, hey, how do you not have any fear of this? Or like, how do you go and do this when you're networking, whatever? So like, what would you say if somebody's like, hey, I really want to work on being more comfortable in a room full of strangers and making new friends and such, what advice would you offer to them?
Yeah, I would say really start to hone your approach. Whether you're trying to go network and talk business or, you know, trying to pick up a date, whatever it is, but, you know, like really hone your approach. And the core part of that is, you know, one, having a good opener, you know, you don't have good to be corny until, yeah. You don't have to be corny. usually, you know, a good opener for me is actually paying a compliment. You know, I'll tell guys all the time, like, hey, I like that shirt. You know, I like that briefcase, or, you know, I see you're an Apple guy, like, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. Little commonality. Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah. Fastest way to make somebody's day and to get their attention. And then from there, it's just building rapport and just finding out as fast as you can the areas that y'all have in similar. So you can start talking about things that people like to talk, you know, as they say, an ocean deep. Once you get somebody talking an ocean deep, then you're starting to build trust. And then it's too easy from there.
Yeah. What's the, agree with all of that. What's the thing that people will come up and use an opener on you that's an automatic no?
That's such a great question.
I shouldn't say automatic no, like you give them a chance, but it's like the immediate, like, oh, this is probably not my person.
Yeah. The people that I would say are trying to tap into my aspirations, or trying to tap into, you know, think of like a salesy or a gimmicky, you know, digital marketer or whatever.
That's what's like, your three year project?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to get, you know, 300% ROI on your ads or whatever. God. Like when somebody tries to, I think, assume what my goals are, or assume like my worldview instead of finding it out in conversation, then that's why I'm automatically turned off.
Yeah. I'm this. I'm the same way. So I have in person, it's the common one. What do you do? I'm like, this person is transactional. The thing that I hear is the way that you get marketed to a lot on LinkedIn. I don't know if you get marketed on LinkedIn for,
I actually don't.
You probably don't. Yeah. You probably don't. Cause you're in such a thing, but as you know, as like what I do, I get marketed all the time. And it's always like, would you like to increase your blah, blah, blah by this? Or like, or, the super inauthentic thing. It's something like, hey, I noticed we both live in New York City. We should connect. Should we? Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Like, and yeah, it's interesting. So I didn't know this about you, but it makes sense. Cause I think you and I are both like upbeat, friendly.
Right.
So let's take a look at the reverse of that question. So what's something that is outside of your comfort zone that might be inside of somebody else's?
Ooh, great question. I think for me, this is something I think about a lot. I am, not to like tout a high horse over, I'm like super adaptable. So like I can blend in, you know, I can go into a situation and immediately start to get the results I want. But the dark side of that, the flip side of that for me is I'm super inconsistent. Because like I'm always able to, so like something that is, you know, for me that I would really love, like, so like I have this, you know, I have a strong sense of self-discipline and, you know, like, you know, have a morning routine, all stuff like that. But, you know, I really admire people who, whether it's a business or, you know, writing a book or, you know, training for a marathon, whatever it is, but those people that can be really, really consistent and do the same thing every day because they know it's going to get them to that one goal.
Yeah.
And not, you know, drive off these different like shiny objects. I really respect that. And I've noticed people that can do that. They formulate the plan, they start to implement the plan, and they, you know, execute and they achieve the results most of the time, whatever. Like for me, my process is, you know, come up with a shoddy plan, immediately start executing, and then just like, you know, I'm putting the wheel on the car as it's going down the road.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so which has paid off for me in some ways, and in other ways it hasn't. And it's always fun to see that difference in me and other people.
Yeah. That's another thing we have in common. I'm much more of a starter.
Yeah.
Hey, I got an idea for a podcast. Let's go do it. Let's see how it goes.
Right.
That I'd like to meet somebody who's good at both of those things. Cause I don't know many people that are. Either seem to be kind of a starter.
Yep.
Or you seem to be kind of a, not that you and I can't finish. It's not about not being able to finish, but it's the thing that fills us up. It's the thing that excites us. And there's the dark side to both of these, right? Like shoddy plans, you can waste a lot of time and energy doing things that aren't going to work. Right. But I also think that there's the reverse is true when you're afraid to start or you're more of a perfectionist. So I hear you're not a perfectionist is what I'm hearing.
No. You know, I am... I'm definitely not a perfectionist when it comes to getting things started. I think what does keep me from finishing things is that's when the perfectionist comes out is, like when you tell me like, I have to put something down and like, I have to be done with it. I think that's where it sometimes comes out for me because it's like, well, this is going to be my last time to touch this. Like whether it's a sense of like constantly wanting to seek more work and keep seeking stuff to do or, because I'm afraid that something else isn't going to pop up in its place or whatever, or just wanting to like leave that lasting mark on something. That's for me where that perfection sometimes does come out.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right. We're going to move along to, one of my favorite questions, and we're going to talk about public speaking. Now I know you do some public speaking specifically for your wine business. My guess is you don't have a real fear of public speaking. If you can be in a room full of strangers, you can probably stand up in a room full of strangers as well and speak. Would be my guess. So if I had the power to give you, well, I do have the power here in my podcast, at least, to give you 5 minutes and you get to deliver a speech to the world or the audience that you wanted to speak to, what would you speak on and what would be your call to action to the audience?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been thinking about this one, you know, after listening to a couple of your other podcasts, you know, I think for me, my message, you know, of course it's got to do with wine. But kind of a bigger picture of wine, food, culture, and how all that starts to come together. And really it's about bringing people together, having conversations, and just kind of seeing what goes from there. It's, I would tell people that, hey, just open up a bottle of wine and, you know, let's see what happens. And it's more so about the process of getting people together at the table and opening that bottle of wine than the conversation that happens afterwards. And, you know, if you did that every day with your coworkers or with your family or with, you know, whatever, and everyone has a glass or two of wine, and just went through that like process of, you know, enjoying the wine, enjoying the food, enjoying the moment, and, you know, not just like in, you know, we, as Americans, we always get a hard time because we're always straight down to business, you know, straight down, we're direct, you know, we are not good at the indirect method. Whereas you go to Europe and it's like, we're going to drag something out over 3 to 4 or 5, you know, excruciating hours of dinner service at some restaurant in Italy or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, there's something for that, I think, of that process of, you know, bringing the right people together in the room and opening up that bottle and really savoring the moment. And then worrying about business and see what, or whatever it is, you know, whatever the serious issues are. By that point, you know, are they even important anymore? I think that's what my message and I guess my call to action would be, you know, just open a bottle and see what happens.
This is a perfect segue because I think later on in the show, you might give us some recommendations on what types of bottles to open. You saw me, we're on video and we're laughing. I'm laughing because in my 20s, it was like, let's just go do a shot or have some beers and see what happens.
Yeah.
At the bar or like, and I was thinking like in Vegas or something, but I appreciate what you've shared so far, Chris. It's been great hearing your answers. And we're going to be right back after this brief commercial break.
The Talking to Cool People podcast is brought to you by Jason Frizzell Coaching. Jason works with amazing people who are looking to find and develop their passion and purpose and create their journey to wherever it is they want to go. Check us out at jasonfrizzell.com, Facebook, or on Instagram. Jason loves hearing from anyone who thinks it would be cool to connect, to be coached, or to be a guest on our show. Email him at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com or DM him on Facebook and Instagram. And now, back to some more amazing conversation on Talking to Cool People.
All right, Chris, we are back. So I have a nice open-ended question for you. It's designed this way because everybody's got different things they want to share. So, Chris, what do you want us to know about you?
What do I want y'all to know about me?
What do you want us to know about you?
You know, I think, you know, the biggest thing is probably how much joy wine really does bring to me. I think a lot of people get frustrated or not frustrated. I think they downplay, you know, how powerful wine can actually be, and downplay, you know, what can happen when everyone's drinking the same glass of wine. So, during COVID I was doing these virtual tastings and everything. And I would get requests for virtual tastings or events or whatever, where, you know, everyone would, not have the same glass or not have the same bottle. And what I noticed is the events where everyone's drinking the same wine or drinking the same bottle, it's almost like they have a common language to start talking about and start communicating about.
Yeah.
Whereas the ones where I did that, people, you know, either brought their own wine or, you know, bought their own wine or just pulled something out of the cellar, which, like I said, I'm not downplaying that or saying that's, you know, one thing is better than the other. But when everyone has the same thing in their glass, that's a game changer. And, I'd start to notice how powerful that is and how it really does bring people together and gives people a common language to start communicating with each other in a new way.
Yeah.
What's we've never talked about this. What's led you? How did you get involved in the wine industry? Like, what it is? Like, you love wine, you like to drink it. You have a business in the wine industry. What is it that led you to that? Like, what was the inspiration, or was there a specific moment? Was it more of a, yeah, I think we'd all like to hear a little bit more about your journey to what led you to, you know, owning a business in the wine industry.
Yeah, that's really funny. I actually thought of a little small anecdote. I'll weave into the story, but what really set me off on the trail. I had my first duty station for when I was in the Army. I was stationed in Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. And I had just gotten back from Afghanistan, and my dad had business there in Colorado Springs. And so every month or every other month or whatever, he would come into town and he would take all his employees out to dinner. And I got to kind of tag along, and it was good. He's like, I got to spend time with my dad, you know, meet his employees and everything. We all go out, have a good time. But we would go to dinner, and then the waiter or the sommelier or whatever would hand out the wine menu and ask if you need help with it or anything. And my dad would just like look at the menu and say, oh yeah, this is what I'm going to order. Like, this is what we're ordering for the table, and just know with like clear certainty.
Like, so he was the boss.
He made the bottle.
Because he knew.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's cool.
He set the, in doing that, he just, whether he knew what he was doing or not, he set the tone.
Right.
For dinner. And that, to me, that just stuck out in my mind so much. And I just planted the seed early on that I knew I wanted to learn more about wine. I wanted to do like that. I wanted to be like my dad and be able to look at a wine list and know what's on the list, or at least know how to pick the wine that's going to make sure we have a great night. Because who doesn't want to have a great night when you're out at dinner having a, you know, $50 ribeye?
Right. Yeah. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. And the other thing, I'm guessing your dad set up the context that, even if you don't like this wine, you better not tell me you don't like it. Cause I was like so sure when I ordered it. Somebody's like, I'm sure everybody's like, yeah, this is really good, even if they maybe wasn't as good as they wanted. What and then so you learned about wines, you started opening your palate, exploring more. And then from there, what led you to deciding that you wanted to do something in the wine industry?
Yeah, so my dad had his own company. And so from early on, that always planted this idea in my mind that I wanted to own my own business. And so fast forward to 2015 or 2016, somewhere in there, you know, I've been in the Army for 5 or 6 years now, and had changed jobs kind of into a new specialty and everything. And I had actually just gotten, had a pretty bad back injury that I was kind of recovering from. And it kind of dampened a few things and a few aspirations I had, especially with the military. That's not to say that, you know, I still won't achieve some of those things, but it definitely made me realize that, you know, life is short. Now everything we do in life has sort of an expiration date, you know. And nothing's going to last forever. And so it started making me start to think a little bit more long-term beyond just my time in the military. And from there, I started, you know, researching what it took to start a business. And so in 2017, I started my own business, you know, got my LLC, you know, put my little product and concept together and started, you know, made my Shopify store online and everything, and put it out there. And then all of a sudden, you know, crickets. You know, I maybe had one or two sales here or there. And what I realized is that I had no idea what I was doing. I just, you know, came up with this concept, totally didn't, you know, check to see if this was a real problem that people had in the world, and just started putting something out there. And what that showed me was, you know, I need a skill set. And so I spent the next 1 to 2 years after that really refining my skills of learning how to do things like social media and marketing and emails and, you know, how to develop a product, how to find product market fit, I started talking to people, started networking with people, both in wine, because I had always been drawn to it, and in other areas, and travel. I also, during that time, I did a lot of travel.
Yeah.
And I will say, you know, we haven't really talked about travel yet. I'd love to talk more about that if we have time, but you know, travel is something that's really given me a lot. It's given me a lot of, not just personal fulfillment and gratitude, but it's given me a lot of direction, and really give me a lot of inspiration. And so, from there, after I had started, you know, kind of developing the skill set, I just moved to California back in 2019. And, you know, I'd always had this passion for wine and, had just kept on learning more and more as much as I could about wine. And so I had started to connect with, you know, started to check out and connect with local wineries in California. And then the COVID happened in 2020. And people were, you know, starting to look for stuff to do. And that's when I just, you know, woke up one day and said, all right, I need to do something with this. We have an opportunity right now. I've got a chance to build something. Let's do it. So I started my own happy hour. I bring on local wineries. We talk about their wines. Everyone would taste it. You know, I'd send out a link every week to people.
Yeah.
And they get a chance to buy the wine straight from the winery. And all that was going good for the summer of last year. But at the end of the day, I still didn't quite have a business yet. And so I really put my head to it. I was like, all right, how do I turn this thing? I've got this community now. How do I turn this thing into a business? And then I literally woke up one day and said, all right, I need to start a wine club. So that way, when people ask me, hey, Chris, what wine are we drinking this week on, you know, Wine with Chris or whatever, I can just tell them, hey, join the wine club and we'll ship that wine to your door. Yeah. That's really how it all came together.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. All right. So Chris, you've been talking a lot because I've been pounding you with questions. Time to flip the script. Yes. You get to ask me. Yeah. I'm a little nervous. Your military training has me a little concerned. I like it. Now you're sitting back. You're like now cracking some knuckles, getting ready. What's something that you want to ask me that I can answer for all of you?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I really think back to kind of some of the calls we had past few weeks or whatever, doing, you know, looking at some of the strength finders and stuff. So I will ask you this, what do you see as your biggest weakness and how do you kind of deal with that in your life, your business, your relationships and everything?
Yeah. That's an easy one for me. I'm not going to talk Clifton Strengths because you and I would probably understand the language, but not everybody would. My biggest, this is going to be cliched. I see my biggest weakness is also one of my strengths. And it's really similar to yours, quite frankly. My biggest weakness in certain areas and where I know it hurts me is I'm not afraid to try things. I'm just not really afraid to fail like a lot of people are. I don't need things to be perfect. I don't need to have the perfect podcast or the perfect business or I don't need to make exactly my target every year. So where that becomes a weakness is that I may end up trying things for too long.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm picturing my grandmother, who's from Kansas, actually. And so it's a very Midwestern, like, it's flying by the seat of your pants.
Yeah.
Would be the saying that you would probably say. And I think that sometimes that's true. And I don't have as much strategy as perhaps I should. So the result is, or the weakness is, I don't have a clear vision for where I want to go. I don't have a clear target. And I'm much more interested in the process. So that can be a weakness when you're running a business because what am I shooting for? What are my aspirations? What are my goals? Like, what are the concrete tactical things that I'm shooting for? But I also see where that actually allows me to go try a bunch of things and see what works. So I think for most people, when they relate, most of us, when you think about your weaknesses, there's a superpower inside of your weakness, or maybe it's inside of your superpower, there's a weakness. I don't know. And we've talked a little bit about this. I'm also a big fan of manage your weaknesses, lean into your strengths.
Yep.
And for a long time I wasn't. It was like, oh, what are the things I'm not very good at that I really need to learn and do? And I would like teach myself things that just felt painful.
Yeah.
And I think that used to be, I think my biggest weakness used to be relating to myself as needing to be fixed all the time. Like, oh, these things I'm not good at need to be fixed first. And I don't know how this goes in the military, but my sense in the military is you have a baseline that everybody meets and then you figure out what people are good at and lean into that. Not like if I'm never going to be a great shoot, let's say like a rifleman or something. You're not going to spend a ton of time and money on me, like learning to be a better rifleman. You're going to have me at a baseline. Then you're going to go, oh, but Jason's really good at negotiating. So we should probably put him into a role that he's good at, or he's good at logistics or something.
Yeah.
So long-winded answer. Like, I think my biggest weakness is my lack of consistency and not having a concrete plan for everything.
I will say this, the military likes to, they like to create a well, as they say, they like to say they have a well-rounded soldier, you know, a well-rounded service member, if you will. And, you know, I think there is some sense of, hey, we need to have everybody at this baseline and this skill or whatever. But, you know, I'm optimistic because I think we're starting to get, you know, firmer grasp on what are people are really capable of and, you know, what intuitively makes the most sense as far as what we ask our people to do. And, you know, I think some people are starting to grasp that and starting to leverage people in ways that really plays to their strengths. I think if we can start to kind of see this kind of polarization, if you will, of skill sets, instead of, you know, everybody having the same skill set, and how we, you know, kind of bring those all together, I think that's going to make us more, effective, whether it's the military or some other organization.
Yeah. I think it's, I mean, it, I'm not an expert on the military other than just, you know, like, but isn't the idea of like large combat forces actually not a modern way of looking at the military anymore? It's more about specialization, small specialized units, technology, things like that, as opposed to like a mass of people that are going to go and do this thing.
So that's a great question that I could spend hours answering, but
how would it go with Warhammer? In Warhammer, what would you have?
short end of it, yes and no. You know, you have to have both. You have to have large, you know, clunky, if you will, large, bulky forces that, you know, can get things done. But then you also need specialized units that can serve specific purposes. And really when you have an integration of both of those things and, you know, a combination of those things, that's when you're being effective, both, you know, fiscally, resource wise, and as far as what, you know, the country is asking the military to do.
Yeah. Cool. Do you, we've got time. Do you have another question for me? And if you don't, then the answer no is perfectly acceptable here.
Yeah. What was your first bottle of wine that you can remember drinking? Yeah. You kind of like really like, oh, this is what wine is. Like, this is,
yeah,
you know, some $2 chuck from, you know, Trader Joe's, if that's out there. You know, I'm not dissing that, but when did you kind of have this like self-awareness of wine?
Yeah, I think I don't remember what it was, but I remember when it was.
Mm.
And it was when I was probably 24. So I was new in my career. Yeah. And I got a role where I would go out to dinner with clients, and most of the clients were much older than me.
Yeah.
Like 20 years older, such. And I remember going to a nice steakhouse in Minneapolis where I'm originally from. And I remember the person that was hosting was somebody in my company, and he ordered a nice bottle. Like, I think it was a Pinot Noir is my recollection. It's been quite a while ago now. But I remember being like, oh, this is really good, especially with this steak. Mm-hmm. And like the idea of like food and wine combined, because I don't know about you, man, but in college, I was like, I really didn't drink wine in college.
Yeah.
I went to school in the Midwest where I was drinking beer. And then, you know, it was like 22 and 23 year old. I wasn't really sitting at home drinking bottles of wine. So yeah, that for me, it's like, I don't remember exactly what it was. I don't know what bottle it was. I don't know what year it was, but I remember like, wow, this really pairs well together. And I'm like, oh, am I getting snobby or something? And so, yeah. And I also like, this is going to be cliche, but I'm a huge Sideways fan. Like I love that movie. I love Paul Giamatti. Yeah. I know that movie like just wreaked havoc on the Merlot growers and like crushed it for the Pinot growers. But I think that movie maybe came out in like 2003 or 2004.
Yeah. 2004, I think.
Yeah 2004. So even like then, like, oh, there's this like dichotomy of you've had this wine that's considered like the cheap or the common person's wine. And then you have like this other one. So I think I like, that's also part of it, but yeah, going back to your question, I remember distinctly where I was at. I'm like, oh, this is really, really good.
Yeah.
Cause I was never somebody who really liked wine that much.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's cause I went to church and had it for communion. I guess I had grape juice until I was 21, but like, I was always like, oh, wine's okay. It tastes okay. But I think it's also cause I never had good wine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, like here's $100 bottle of wine. And we'll talk a little bit about this. Not that the price point is the only thing. Cause most people know anything about wine, know that it's not just the price point, but the idea of like, oh, like when you combine the knowledge with a decent bottle with a certain type of food, like that all comes together as one thing. Yeah. So that's what I got for you. You're making me dig into the vault on this one. That was a good question.
Yeah.
Do you have your first recollection? Like, do you remember like when you're out with your dad and you came back, like, do you remember the one that you're like, ooh, I really need to know more about this. Was there any specific moment or was it over time?
You know, it for me, I think what really cemented in my mind this whole thing about wine was, you know, having that experience with my dad over those couple of years and you know, of course, keeping to get exposed to that.
Yeah.
Because at the time I was, you know, same thing. I was 23, 24, you know, having, you know, been able to drink, you know, legally only for a couple of years and, you know, of which I spent half of that time in Afghanistan, not drinking.
You don't want to be hungover in Afghanistan is my guess.
Yeah. You can't be. But I was just starting to get exposed to this whole idea of like the culinary experience of going out and, you know, having a great dinner and having great wine and, you know, and like really turn this into an experience. And then in 2017, I took my first solo trip to Italy. I set an intention for myself of, hey, I'm going to learn as much as I can about Italian wine on this trip. And so went there for 2.5 weeks, hit all the touristy spots and everything. But really, at the end of the day, I made sure I prioritized learn about Italian wine. And so did tours and, you know, went to wine shops and, you know, enotecas and all that stuff. And, just start, you know, talk to people about Italian wine. And it was, I think that's when, you know, things kind of really accelerated for me. That was sort of an inflection point.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know that I was going to do something to wine, but I knew that wine was going to play a really big part of my life.
Yeah.
And that's for me is pretty clear in my mind.
That's cool. Before we wrap on this, I want to give a shout out to my wife, Kirsten, who's going to be a future guest on my show.
Yeah.
We went to France and Italy in September of 2015.
Mm.
And she was 5 months pregnant.
That's awesome.
So she loves wine much more than I do. So she's like, wait, let me get this straight. We planned this trip. Now we're pregnant. I can't drink wine in France and Italy. And I remember this conversation where we were in Tuscany. We're in,
Florence.
So we went under the hills of Tuscany. Yep. We went to like a wine tasting thing. And she's like, and I also can't have uncured meats. This feels really, really cruel.
Yep.
So we have a picture of her 5 or 6 months pregnant in like a vineyard in Tuscany somewhere. And it's a stunning venue. And like, I drank a lot of wine that trip and she didn't get any of it. She had a couple sips. Our daughter turned out fine.
Yeah.
But I say all this because of Kirsten, if you're listening, we owe her a trip back to
like
France and Italy, like the two best wine places on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, I think a lot of people would say at least.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And if anybody listening has not been to Italy and seen the vineyards there, it's stunning, stunningly beautiful.
Yep.
Breathtaking. It's like watching The Godfather, except you're actually there, you know, like in the first Godfather, when he goes to Italy, you know, like out in the middle of the country.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Chris, I have a few more questions for you. If you have a little bit more time for us,
let's do it.
All right. So what's the thing that you are most proud of?
Ooh, man. You know, I probably would say, probably my military service, you know, just, I enjoy what I do. I love my job. Love the people I get to work with. And I love how, you know, it contributes to a higher purpose, and you get a chance to really have impact on people and kind of, you know, the country and the world in some small, you know, aspect or whatever. But, you know, that was a long time goal of mine since I was a kid, and, you know, being able to do something that you set out for yourself is just, it's an awesome feeling.
Yeah. Did you come from a military family?
I did not. Military skipped a generation. So all of my both my grandfathers. So one grandfather, he was a reserve major in the Army during World War II, and then the other served in the Air Force just after, because he wasn't old enough yet during World War II. But I also had a bunch of great uncles who all were tail gunners on B-17s during World War II.
Wow.
And one of them actually was shot down 3 times over Europe. And the first 2 times he got evacuated. So it's actually really cool. I've done a lot of reading and I love history.
Yeah.
Researched a lot of this, but during World War II, they had this really, you know, they had the underground, right? And that's how they would evacuate people. When pilots would get shot down, they would put them into the underground system and you'd be going from safe house to safe house, waiting for a, you know, clandestine pickup of an aircraft out in random field in the middle of Europe, you know, whatever. So they had like had routes in France, and they also had routes in Southern Europe, like Romania, Hungary area, whatever. But, his first 2 times made it back to England. And then the third time was shot down and was captured. And then spent the final, you know, 3-4 months in, a POW camp. Luckily he was actually Jewish. So my family's got a lot of Jewish heritage, and luckily was able to conceal the fact that he was Jewish, and made it to the end of the war. So it's pretty, pretty crazy, pretty cool story. Yeah.
That's pretty, man, this is a lot. Like I know what it's like to be shot down, and then I go and do it again. And then I go and do it again. The Levies are a little nuts. Is that what we're getting here? The Levies are a little crazy. I love it. That's awesome. Well, thank you for your service on behalf of all of us. I do not come from a military family. My two grandfathers, they were in the reserves, but they never saw any combat or anything. And both in Korea, but they never went overseas. And I actually never had any aspirations to do military. I think it would have been really good for me, and also would have been I think like basic would have been good for me to like whip some of the rule following back into shape. I'd have been like, you want me to do what? And they'd be like, no, you don't understand. You don't have a choice. You're doing this thing. And so thank you for your service, and thank you for the impact that you and everybody else you serve with makes for all of us. And on behalf of all of us, you know, man, what a job that you can just point at and be like, this is the difference this job makes. You know, there's a lot of jobs you're like, is this really making a difference for the world? Like, that's like, this is making a difference for the world. So thank you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. Ready to get a little vulnerable?
Sure. Let's do it.
All right. We're not drinking wine, so you might not cry, but maybe, I don't know. What's something that you're afraid might actually be true about you?
Ooh, something you're afraid that might actually be true. You know, I will say I definitely can, I see myself as sometimes sensitive and compassionate, you know, and I won't say people have taken advantage of that too much, but sometimes, you know, I don't always get to control, you know, how that comes out. And so I would say it's, you know, some, you know, you want to project this, you know, persona, you know, this tough guy or tough girl or whatever that, you know, doesn't have fear or whatever, but I'll be the first to admit, you know, we all have our things that we deal with and things we face. And, you know, I'm definitely, certainly no different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that would make you human.
Right.
And not a robot or a psychopath.
Right.
Nice.
Pass the test. All right.
Yep. Okay. So this is, so we've determined that Chris is not a robot nor a psychopath, at least not here in the podcast today. So Chris, how do you see the world?
Ooh, great. Another great question.
And also, you know, just a nice, light, easy question, you know.
Yeah.
How do you see the world? No big deal.
So one of the things I've really been thinking about lately is how do I compare people, right? How do I view people? And what I've kind of come to the realization of is I don't believe any one person's better than the other person, but we each have things, obviously we're better at than others, but we kind of all are kind of like have this holistic, you know, expression of ourselves that comes out. And, you know, I can throw a baseball this far. I can, you know, run this fast, or I can, you know, my IQ is this or whatever, but I think we all have this unique combination in us that makes us completely different. And each of us aren't, you know, no one person's better than the other person. I think we each have these things that we have that are superpowers, and that, you know, we should each try to tap into those things, and be able to share that with other people. And you know, on that note, I think, you know, the world is an abundant place that we can get everything we want and everyone else can get everything that they want. But at the same time, you know, there's people out there that definitely don't see the world that way and don't operate in that way. And sometimes we have to deal with those consequences.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I think it's a very positive and refreshing way to see the world. Yeah. So I want to spend a couple minutes talking about two exciting things that you have going on. Number one, I want to talk a little bit more about the wine club, like who's it for, you know, kind of your philosophy behind the wine club, how that works. And number two, I want to talk about your new podcast that you're launching, because I'm going to assert that we have some wine listeners or wine lovers who are listening to this podcast today, because they see, oh, this guy's a wine guy. I could care less about Jason, but I like this guy, Chris. He's a wine guy.
Yeah.
So in any order you want to, I'd love to hear about the wine club, whatever you want to share there. And two, we'll hear about your new podcast that you have coming out very soon. So what do you want to share with us around those two things?
Yeah. So the wine club, you know, I already told a story about how the wine club came to fruition, but I guess a little bit more background on the wine club. When I moved to California, I just fell in love with American producers. And, you know, before I'd taken my trip to Italy, I've been to France several times. I've been to Champagne, been to Burgundy, tasted plenty of French wine, plenty of Italian wine, and it's all great. I've had some Spanish wines too. They're all fantastic, but I love this notion of challenging the status quo and really crafting an awesome product. I think there's a lot of great American producers out there that are doing that, that are, you know, bringing stuff to market that really challenges this old world view of wine. And that's what we're trying to showcase in the club. We like to say we're telling the great American wine story. You know, we're showcasing these American producers, these boutique, you know, wineries that are, you know, sometimes owner winemaker, You know, sometimes the winemaker's consulting on a couple of different projects because that's how small some of these are. But these wines are just rich in history and rich in stories of, you know, influential people that have been involved in their, you know, existence and been involved in keeping these lineages of vineyards going that, allows us to have some of the amazing wines we have today. And to me, that's what we try to bring on the club every month.
Nice. Cool. Well, and we'll be sure and share all the links to the wine club and everything in the show notes. So anybody is interested in signing up, you can hit it up there. And second question or second thing I'd love to hear about is the new podcast. So
yeah,
what is it? What are you talking about? What should we know about that?
Yeah. So the podcast is called Everyday Wine. And I think people will hear this before the podcast launches, but it's launching next week. And really the podcast is about how wine is kind of can become this everyday thing. Because a lot of people see wine as, oh, I only have a nice bottle of wine when I go to the restaurant, or, you know, I have to, you know, worry about, you know, picking the right wine or making sure I have the right wine for this person or gifting the right wine and everything. So it's not just making it approachable. There's plenty of great people out there who are making wine more approachable right now. And I hope I could contribute to that, but this is really more about making it a common everyday thing. Like you would treat beer or a cocktail or something else. And then using that as a way to really talk about culture, lifestyle, and food, and how that interplays and overlays with each other, and comes together in one moment or one experience.
Cool. So that's releasing the week of what is August 16th?
Yep, 16th. So it'll be rolling out next Wednesday, August 18th. So if you're listening to this, go check it out. This episode and. Looking forward to hopefully again having everybody let me know what they think.
Yeah. Awesome, Chris. All right. Before we wrap for today, I'm going to get a little selfish.
Sure.
But I think all of us are going to find value in this. Say I'm a person who has a very important client engagement, or maybe I'm single, which I'm not, but maybe I'm meeting my significant other's parents. And I know that they're wine people, and I can only choose one type of wine. Let's say we're having like chicken or something. I don't know, chicken or steak, whatever. I know that would probably be a different answer. If like, what's a go-to for all of us out here? They're like, I don't know. What in your opinion, what's a go-to that I can never go wrong with in terms of if you want to name the winery, that's great. More importantly, what's the varietal? It's like, this is an easy go-to. This is a crowd pleaser.
Yeah. Great question. So I you know, I loved the movie Sideways, but I'm going to have to disagree a little bit with, or agree with, Paul Giamatti, but Pinot Noir, you can't go wrong with Pinot Noir. You have a chance of getting white drinkers. A lot of white drinkers won't drink heavy reds. Pinot Noir will be on the lighter side. So it's going to appease them. And most red drinkers will drink Pinot Noir. So it's going to appease them. And it just goes great with a lot of different things. The thing about Pinot Noir, especially a really good one, is the acidity. It usually has a medium plus to high acidity. And that acidity allows it just to pair really well with a lot of different things. And so, you know, I really love Pinot Noirs from the Santa Lucia Highlands. So it's Santa Lucia Highlands, you know, LUCIA, or sometimes it's abbreviated SLH. So if you look for anything that's got SLH on it, it's probably a Santa Lucia Highlands Pinot Noir.
Where are those islands located?
So those highlands are in Monterey County in California.
Okay. So it's where the movie took place. Yeah.
It is not actually. So
no, I think
Sideways took place in Santa Barbara, actually. Los Olivos and Solvang, just north of Santa Barbara. But the Santa Lucia Highlands is just the southern tip of Monterey Bay, right there, east of Monterey Bay Peninsula. And they produce some of the best Pinot Noir in the world. And I highly recommend you check out those wines. And you know, if you ever need a go-to, then that's your go-to.
Cool. Do you, if you'd be willing to share, do you have any specific vineyard, one or two vineyards you'd call out?
Yeah. So there's the great thing is there's a lot of collaboration, lots of up and coming stuff. And we're actually featuring one of my friends, his name's Miguel, and his winery is called Lepe Cellars. And they are just now rolling out their Pinot Noir this month. And so we're going to be featuring some of his latest releases in the wine club this month. And so highly recommend you check him out. Check out his wines. He's a younger guy that's really been bootstrapping his winery from the start, and just moved into a beautiful tasting room in downtown Carmel by the Sea with all the other big names, and is just building an awesome brand with both his wine and his business. And so highly recommend you check him out.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely we'll throw that in the show notes as well. All right, Chris, it was awesome to have you on today. And last thing for this time, and by the way, you're always welcome back.
Yeah.
Leave us with some words of wisdom, and those words of wisdom should be short and sweet. What do you got for us?
Yeah. A wise man once told me, I hope I don't mess this up, but don't look at where you're going. Look at where you want to go.
I love that. And that's actually, I'm not a motorcycle rider, but I believe that's advice you give, or that's what you train. Like,
but it is,
like, I am a cyclist, but it, yeah. And it's funny because my daughter, we're teaching her to ride her bike, and she almost swerved into a car because she was looking behind her.
Yeah.
And she turned her head to the right and went to the right. That's actually like practical advice for people that are learning to ride motorcycles, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, that's probably where, you know, I got my motorcycle license a long time ago, but that's probably where I heard it first, but I've heard it in a couple other contexts. And to me, it really sticks with me because, you know, if you're looking at where you're going right now, you're just going to be in the weeds of things. Whereas if you stay focused on where you want to go, where you want to be, then you'll get there.
Yeah. Again, thank you so much, Chris, for being on today. Everybody check out the Wine Club, check out the podcast launching next week, August 18th on, I'm assuming, iTunes, Spotify, all the podcasting places, and wish you the very best in everything you're up to. And I can't wait to have you on again and connect and see how it's going. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Jason. Take care.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Talking to Cool People with Jason Frizzell. If you enjoyed today's episode, please tell your friends, follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and give us a shout out, or take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. If something from today's episode piqued your interest and you'd like to connect, email us at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com. We love hearing from our listeners because you're cool people too.